This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Learning in Vermont middle and high schools is about to become much more individualized. By November 30th, these schools will be required to have personalized learning plans, or PLPs, for most of their students, with the remainder of students receiving these plans over the next 3 years. John Clark is a former UVM education professor and the author of Personalized Learning, Student Design Pathways to High School Graduation.
It's basically a way to get a student to declare a purpose or discover a purpose for being in a high school at all, and then to continue on into adult life with further plans for education and hopes for work and with the skills and competencies he or she might need to succeed.
Okay, so how do students and teachers and parents work together to find that purpose and keep the student walking down that path? We're going to learn more about personalized learning today, and we'll be hearing from teachers on the value and the challenges of implementing these plans for all their students. But first, let's talk with Tom Alderman, Director of Secondary and Adult Education for the Vermont Agency of Education. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Before we get into technicalities and bureaucracy and, you know, this speech that people are unfamiliar with that has acronyms and stuff, just tell me the idea and the value in me as a ninth grader, say, having a personalized learning plan.
Well, we believe the value is in greater engagement, sense of relevance. The plan should be based on that student's unique needs and interests. Based on a thorough analysis and knowledge of that student. So the expectation is that if students are more engaged, feel that their educational experience is more relevant to them, the outcomes will be better.
But so, okay, so if I'm a ninth grader or if I'm the parent of a ninth grader, what does that mean, the outcomes will be better? I mean, presumably I'm going to be pushing my student to graduation anyway. So what's a better outcome from having a personalized learning plan?
Well, graduation alone is not the intended outcome. We want every graduate to be college and career ready, to be prepared to go on to whatever the experience is they're moving to after high school. So the other element that we haven't spoken about yet is moving to a proficiency-based system so that time and place become variables, and the standards against which we're measuring student progress are the constant. So if students are pursuing their own unique, flexible pathway to graduation, and we're holding them accountable for standards in the content areas and transferable skills like problem solving, critical thinking, the expectation is that the outcome at the end of that experience will be students who are more knowledgeable, more skilled, better prepared to move on.
And the state feels so strongly about this that it's mandating that all schools and students make these kinds of plans. What evidence did you have that this is a good idea and scalable to the state?
Well, this is not something that happened overnight. It's been evolving over many years. If we just go back to the early part of this century and the high schools on the move, that study and recommendation talked about personalization and flexibility. There's been a lot of work going on in our schools in this context for a number of years. I was just speaking with the Chittenden South Supervisory Union Board last night, and the observation was made that they've been doing this kind of work for 30-plus years, and the state is now in a position where we're saying, this is good, we expect you to be moving in this direction. It's also important to note that Vermont is one of five New England states that are members of the New England Secondary School Consortium, and the agenda of that organization is along these same lines, and we have leveraged each other and learned from each other. It's also true that there's a lot of this work going on in other parts of the country. I think what's unique about Vermont is that we have statewide policy to this effect now, and what you see in other parts of the country is still limited to districts or even single schools.
Today we're finding out about personalized learning plans. These are starting to be phased in as a mandatory part of middle and high school education for Vermont students and schools. And the idea is they invite students, parents, and teachers to think about a roadmap to graduation that might not only include standard high school classes, but it could also incorporate independent projects, work study, or other methods of learning and job preparation. I'd love to hear if you've had experience with personalized learning plans from whatever perspective, maybe as a teacher teacher, as a parent, a student, or an administrator. What do you think of them? What's the value of having each student think about how he or she wants to get to graduation and beyond, and what life goals are? And do you think that's something that 12, 14, 15-year-olds can be thinking about? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Keenan says students can set their own learning goals for themselves with their teachers. It will help struggling students gain confidence in their learning capabilities. Teachers will have more opportunity to engage with each student one-on-one and self-direct, and will provide teachers to assess students better when they are academically. Great idea. And Jordan says, I haven't read the law yet, but one program which does work with individualized or personalized education is the one begun at South Burlington High School called The Big Picture. It's a program my younger son took part in, which fits the curriculum to the personal interests of the student, in his case, computer coding. The program worked very well for him and required internship and monthly reports to his fellow students with a parent present. I strongly believe in this program and would like to hear your take on it. So is that the kind of idea, Tom Alderman, that you're looking at for students who have a particular interest to be able to use that as a way to learn and as something that is more than just a hobby? It's part of their pathway to graduation and future employment.
Yeah, the Big Picture program is an example of the kind of personalization we're looking for and flexibility in a student's experience. I think it's important to say that the flexible pathways to graduation, that for us that really means that there are potentially as many flexible pathways as there are students. We want each student's PLP to reflect their own unique pathway to graduation. So we want to take advantage of opportunities, including the traditional course-based classroom experience and beyond that. You mentioned a few of those: work-based learning, virtual learning. Students, while they're still in high school, taking advantage of college opportunities through the dual enrollment and early college programs. We know that learning is not limited to the classroom. Students are learning throughout their lives, throughout the day, throughout the year, and we want to take advantage of that and value that in terms of students meeting our expectations for graduation.
So you're requiring schools then to have this flexibility, but are the opportunities out there for students in every school in Vermont who want to take a hold of something other than a traditional classroom setting?
Well, I'll mention just the college experience, for example. We understand that if we're requiring students to access that by going to a college campus, that means that rural schools not in proximity to a college campus, those students are at something of a disadvantage. So we want to make sure that virtual college courses are available and that college courses can be brought to a high school campus where that's appropriate. In other words, we want some equity of access in that regard. Smaller rural communities may have a more difficult time finding work-based learning experiences for students, but at the same time, there's a little less competition for those experiences that do exist. So we believe that it's possible for our schools to help students find those kinds of opportunities. And this is one of the things we're asking that educators be prepared to do in the future, to be facilitators and managers of that learning experience with students. I should also mention that the legislature was very specific when they talked about personalization and requiring PLPs in grades 7 through 12. They also said that personalization is very important in the elementary grades. And I think one of the primary reasons for that is we cannot expect 7th graders to engage in a meaningful planning process if they've never been asked to take any level of ownership over their learning experience. So we need to be helping them prepare for what we're then asking them to do as 7th graders.
I'm talking with Tom Alderman. He's Director of Secondary and Adult Education at the Vermont Agency of Education, and we're talking a little bit about personalized learning plans. The first phase of the new law that requires schools, middle and high schools, to have personalized learning plans goes into effect next month, and it'll be phased in over a couple of years. And we've got a lot of listeners who want to weigh in as well. Our number's 1-800-639-2211. Brad's calling in from Stowe. Hi, Brad. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a question, and which is, are private schools also pursuing personalized learning plans? And if they are not, Why is that? And I have to admit, I am a little bit skeptical about this, or at least a little bit concerned. So I'll listen to your answer.
Well,
thank
Brad,
you.
Tell me why you're skeptical and concerned before we let you go.
Well, sure. You know, I think that it's what I'm seeing in our school, and we have a wonderful school system, I must say, but I'm a little concerned that there's too much of a focus on non-traditional, specifically technology platforms, and teaching those to our children, and not enough of an emphasis on the basic traditional, let's say, three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. And by trying to be almost, well, I would say too advanced, we're not giving our children necessarily the core foundation that they're going to need to succeed in the future.
Brad, I got it. Thanks for that, and thanks for clarifying. So just quickly, Tom Alderman, private schools not required under this law to implement personalized learning plans, right?
That's correct, but the experience so far is that those schools are generally saying, yes, we want to do this as well. You know, we have a lot of publicly funded students in our independent schools, and we think that is important, and we're glad that the independent schools are moving in that direction.
And what about to Brad's point that he's worried that the fundamentals aren't being taught? And if you allow a student to say, here's how I'm going to go through school, and it's going to be a lot of independent learning and some work-based learning, and I'm going to be doing this outdoor educational skills program, how do you then make sure that they're prepared with math and English and all of the other things that are sort of competency-based traditionally for schools?
Well, that is a primary responsibility of the educator in that three-way partnership: educator, student, parent in the planning process. As educators, we need to make sure that a student's plan is in fact going to result in graduation and college and career readiness as measured by having met and demonstrated proficiency against the standards we say are expected for graduation. So we believe that's the framework through which students will get those basic skills and knowledge. This is also a place where I want to mention the transferable skills, which is a new aspect in addition to the content areas that we believe are important, such as problem-solving, critical thinking, communication skills. And we believe the way students will engage with and practice and acquire those transferable skills is through engagement with content. And in every content area, there are a number of transferable skills that are aligned. For every transferable skill, the number of content areas that are aligned.
We got a note from H. Vermont who says, I don't mean to be a party pooper, but how are schools supposed to implement this program without spending more money? We can't keep increasing the mandates we place on public education and expect the cost to decrease. So where's the funding coming from? I'm also concerned that this kind of program for kids can devolve into tracking, where kids who might flourish if exposed to education outside their realm get an individual learning plan based on their limited seventh grade experience and desires. That said, of course, it's a great boon for ambitious kids as long as there's a solid core curriculum beneath it. Making it the law of the state is a bit of a push unless it comes with funding. So what about that financial piece, Tom?
Well, we don't expect that that would be possible if what happens is that we put on top of what we're already doing these new expectations. What we're saying here is that there is a better way for us to meet the needs of all of our students. And it's important to note that we're talking about all of our students who will have PLPs and pathways to graduation. That implies that there are some things about the way we conduct public education now that we need to rethink and retask our resources from in order to accomplish these new goals.
Give me a specific example.
Well, I think over time we'll see our teachers, for example, be more engaged as facilitators and managers of the learning experience with their students as opposed to dispensers of information. And that may imply some changes over time to the way we prepare and license and endorse teachers. As we take greater advantage of learning opportunities beyond the classroom and the school building, there may be opportunities for us to realize some savings. I should mention that as an example of the kind of opportunities that are out there beyond the regular classroom, we've been doing a lot of work with what are referred to generally as informal educators, organizations like the museums around Vermont, who provide learning opportunities And we're trying to work with them and help them be able to describe what it is they offer in the context of the standards so that schools can see that and understand that's an opportunity, and students can understand that's an opportunity to address certain standards. Can we take advantage of that in terms of our pathway to graduation?
Tom Alderman is Director of Secondary and Adult Education for the Vermont Agency of Education. He's been helping us understand the new state law and why it's in place for schools to have mandatory personalized learning plans for all middle and high school students. It's a law that's being phased in starting this fall. Tom, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jane.
Coming up, we're going to hear from two teachers on what it's like to actually work with students on these plans, one who's been doing it at Mount Abraham Middle High School for years, and another who's coming to the process with these new regulations. We're also going to take more of your calls and emails. Mark says, I think PLPs are a great opportunity for kids that are motivated to learn and who have the skills and wherewithal to challenge themselves with innovative projects. This is likely a good way to allow high-performing kids to flourish by allowing them to set the bar higher for themselves than is the norm. That being said, there's sure to be a large number of students generally struggling anyway for whom PLPs may just be a daunting obstacle. So we'll talk a little bit about that, how all students are supposed to benefit from personalized learning plans. And if you'd like to see a sample of what we're talking about, what that actually entails, and what it looks like for a student to write a personalized learning plan, we have a sample, a link to a sample on the Vermont Edition Facebook page, which is a public page. So you can go there, find the link, and look at what these personalized learning plans actually do and look like and are written up as. And again, if you have a question, 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on our Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We just heard from Tom Alderman at the Agency of Education on why the state is mandating personalized learning plans for middle and high school students and how that's being phased in starting next month. But what's it like to be a teacher who now has to work with students to create these plans and to help them follow through? If you have experience with that as a parent or a student, or if you want to ask a question about what it's like from the teacher's perspective, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Josie Jordan is an English teacher on leave this year from the Personalized Learning Department at Mount Abraham Union Middle High School in Bristol, where she's helped design and implement their personalized learning programs over the last 12 years. And she actually started a business called School Hack Solutions last year, which designs software for schools to use for personalized learning. So, Josie, you are really vested in this process, I take it.
I love it. I've seen it. It changes the lives of students. It changes the lives of their families and once you see the power and effect, you get married to it.
Okay, so Josie's married to it. Joanna Fowler, our other guest now, is a high school English teacher at Twinfield Union School, where they're currently making the transition to personalized learning plans. Joanna, do you feel like you're married to PLPs, dating, bad relationship, good relationship?
I think we've spotted them and thought they were cute, and we're trying to figure out how to get to know them better.
Well, so Josie, since you've been doing this work for a long time at Mount Abe, what actually prompted the school, well before the state thought this is something that all schools should do, what prompted Mount Abe to say this is something that we want to incorporate into how we teach students and prepare them?
Well, I believe it was part of, I know Ed McGuire was on that High Schools on the Move task force. And there were other individuals in the school that recognized students were doing amazing things and trying to find a way to, quote unquote, get them credit. And so that is how Mount Abe first stepped into it.
Okay, so again, this is what I asked Tom to do, but I'm going to ask you to do it too, Josie. Pretend I'm a ninth grader. What do I have to do to make my personalized learning plan? What's the plan? What do I have to do, you know, in 10th and 11th grade, but what is the plan? What am I actually doing here?
Well, each school is approaching this differently. When we look at, okay, the concept of the PLP, we're going to be looking at what is it that gets you going? What is it that gives you lift? What is it that sparks your interest? And then we're going to be looking at, okay, well, now that we see that it's sugaring, it's coding, like that parent who had written in. Now what skills do you need for this? And then that's when, by Vermont focusing on the proficiencies and the skills, this is the way that you can help structure a student's learning so that they're maximizing their opportunity to these resources to develop the skills to pursue their interest.
And Joanna Fowler, as we heard, this is going to be mandatory for all schools starting at the end of November for 7th and 9th graders and for some upperclassmen. And you're just starting to do this at Twinfield. What is it entailing at this point?
At this point, we're working on educating our faculty. We need to have everyone on the same page before we can talk to students. So we're really trying to plan some professional development so that everybody is speaking the same language and clearly understands the point of the PLP. And then we have, instead of our parent conference day that we normally do, we're going to have some parent informational evenings and then move into the individual conferencing with students.
Okay, so you said one of the things that you're doing is getting everybody on the same page in terms of figuring out what's the value of a PLP, a personalized learning plan. How would you enunciate then, from your perspective, what the value is?
Well, I think part of the change that we're looking at is a change from classes required to pass with at least a 70% for graduation to knowledge and skills that you must have in order to graduate. So once we have those articulated, we can show the kids, all right, these are the goals you're working toward now. And so you need to have a plan in order to be able to achieve those goals.
And do you see the value in this, Joanna?
Oh, yes. I think it makes so much more sense. And it's so much clearer for the students to see what I am, what skill and knowledge I'm actually getting, what I'm supposed to understand, rather than just, did I get all my homework in, and, you know, is my average high enough? I think it also translates into more information for colleges that are looking at student work and student transcripts, and then they'll really see where a student's strengths lie. And it's much more clearer of a report on a student's achievement levels.
We're going to get deeper into this, but we have a lot of listeners also who are chomping at the bit to talk here and share their perspective. And again, you can go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition or post a note on our Facebook page where you can also see a sample personalized learning plan from the Agency of Education. We got a note from Julia who says, what a great conversation. Finally, bricks and mortar education gets what homeschoolers have been doing all along. When students are asked to do their own education and the proper facilitation is given to that ownership, children thrive. There are enormous challenges to this new model, and homeschoolers with their skill set of individualized learning can help. And let's go to Lori calling in from Barton. Hi, Lori. Your thoughts.
Hi, how are you today?
Great.
My question is this. When you're in a classroom, you know, high school level, it's too bad the gentleman had left the show, and I'm on the heels of what Bob had said when he had called in about, you know, the basic tenets of education, which are what are missing. If you're in a school system like my two kids are right now, where there are 9th and 10th graders that can't read beyond the 1st and 2nd grade level, I'm pretty sure that this kind of program is not going to help those kids. Their life skills, they're already lacking in those life skills. My other question is this. If you're a teacher and you've got 42 minutes of a structured environment and you've got 19 to 25 kids, how is a single teacher, educator, supposed to implement each individual on every given day if you have a total of like 110 children you're teaching every day? So I'm thinking that probably they should have brought the teachers in on this legislation before they implemented this program.
Lori, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. And I'm going to throw it first to Josie Jordan, because Mount Abe is a school with a very wide breadth of students with different perspectives, different socioeconomic status, different skills and abilities. So to Lori's first point of, mm-hmm. How are you going to get students who still need to make sure they're learning basic skills? You know, how does this fit into an educational process that actually does work for them and gets them prepared?
Well, what's interesting is that personalized learning approaches the person first. And so if we are understanding who he is, getting the information of what it is that my student turns to, because I have done this. I've done this with 120 students. And if you find out the interest, that gets you the engagement. So, for example, a student of mine with snowmobiles wanted to fix his snowmobile. And I can't do it. I can't get home. Don't have the transportation. I said, what if it was here? And just the light went off. He's like, I could work on it here. And I was like, yeah, we could figure it out. And he began writing. He began writing the letter to the custodian. He had to write the letter to the principal. He had to write the argument as to how he would be responsible. And then he was the one, this student who hadn't written, he said, I've never written anything before. And he learned this whole etiquette of persuasive writing. He learned business letters. He then had to have a meeting. And then he had to learn how to conduct himself professionally. He thought about what he was going to wear for this discussion, almost like an interview, because he was being interviewed, whether he could handle the responsibility. It went on to him having to say, how is he even going to get it to school? And that turned into, he himself went into Google and figured out Google Draw. This student ended up being a model for some of my other students as to how to write effectively, persuasively.
Now, if that student then wants to take the SATs and apply to colleges that many of whom, if they don't require, still recommend things like standardized tests like the SATs, does that skill set that he learned from getting his snowmobile to the school, being able to fix it, learning those technical skills and the writing skills, does that translate to standardized testing?
Well, it does translate because of encountering obstacles, which the majority of taking a standardized test is encountering obstacles and how you're handling it and how you juggle your time in taking the test and allocate your, okay, my time to this or my time to that, and problem solve. So it does transfer. It also does the confidence. If you get a sense of confidence and, okay, now I actually can, quote unquote, play school, which is what some of these prior lower performers, I've had student personalized learning reveals the tool set, the skills that this student had that none of us knew before until she or he was doing something in which she was invested.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm with the Tarrant Institute for Innovative Education at the University of Vermont, and we're working with middle schools around the state to help them implement PLPs. And I just wanted to emphasize that students need to acquire the skills of personalized and flexible learning in middle school in order to be successful in high school and beyond. And perhaps Josie can speak to it, because I know that Mount Abe has worked with the middle and high school students. But how can we, Josie, how can we develop the skills and dispositions in middle school so that students are successful with personalized learning all the way through middle and high school?
Hmm. I'd say let's give them a chance, like give them the time, have it structured into the schedule that it is part of an advisory system is what I'm now with my business working with a variety of schools across the state. And they've often found that within an advisory system, you have that one adult with whom students have connection. And then you have the time set aside in which students' interests and passions are being brought to the table to be discussed, to be encouraged, and for them to hear about resources and opportunities in their area. It gives them interest and hope towards pursuing it.
Our number, if you'd like to weigh in on personalized learning plans, your experience with them, is 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post notes on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Let's go to John calling in from Derby Line. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
My mind's all over the place on this one, but I'm trying to keep an open mind. My concerns are that all the initiatives the state's had for the last 10 years or so have forced schools to spend more and more of their energy and more and more of their time on the lowest performing students, you know, the goal being to try to get those students who are getting a 1 or a 2 on their achievement test up to a 3, and at the expense of students who are maybe brighter or capable of doing more. And I don't see where this is going to change it at 7th and 8th grade. It might work in the high school where they have a whole platform of offerings, but if you have an 8th grader who's ready for algebra, but the school doesn't offer it, I don't see how they're going to be able to fulfill their plan. You know, I can see you're working for someone who wants to go out and work in the woods or fix a snow machine or something, but how does it help the academically gifted student?
Well, and John, one of the things that Tom Alderman was saying from the Agency of Education was that there's also a particular focus on early enrollment for college and dual enrollment for students who want to be doing high school and college, or who can go for a year of college and then also get a high school graduation credit. And online learning is a big part of this plan as well. But Joanna Fowler, I'd love to bring you back into the conversation to John's point of, you know, how are schools going to implement this for all different kinds of students and bring back Lori's question about, isn't this just more time for teachers who already don't have enough time? How are you seeing this as you start to implement it?
There's an amazing requirement of time to get this set up. We've had most of our professional development and faculty meetings geared around this. And I think over the next few years, as this really gets off the ground, it does require a huge investment from the teachers. But the idea is that the students will be able to take ownership of their own learning, and it will be guiding them. And they'll be taking on a lot of the job, actually, of planning their education. So, it's tough because right now it does seem like the teachers are doing a ton of work. But, the hope is that eventually it'll put the responsibility in the students' hands. And that, I think, is a big piece that even resonates with the kids that are in middle school right now, is if they're part of the conversation and they can have something to say about their education instead of just being told what it is that they're going to do.
And to John's point about that kid in eighth grade who's ready for algebra or pre-calculus, there's a space for that kid in the personalized learning plan process to find a way to get that class on his or her itinerary?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, yeah. I think just having the conversation, it opens up the door to, well, maybe we can look into this. Our school is really small, and we have limited resources, but we also have a personalized learning program called Renaissance. We also have teachers who are willing to do independent studies and to work things out with kids. And I think the plan basically creates the initial conversation to open those doors for kids. What I've found is in middle school is when kids decide, am I going to go to college? Am I going to invest in high school? And it seems, it seems really early, but that's the time that they tend to check out if they're going to. So if they can be engaged in their learning as part of building this plan, and they can see a future ahead of them, whatever that future may be, whether it's go to college or go to the tech center, whether they're a high achiever or a struggling student, I think having an idea of the plan, having a say in the process really makes a difference.
So Josie Jordan, how do you guide students who in seventh or ninth grade may be motivated by certain things and may 4 years later have a completely different vision of who or what they want to be? I mean, I wanted to be a farmer in seventh grade. And if I had made a personalized learning plan, it certainly would have put me on a different path. It might have been an equally good path, but that was different than what I wanted to do when I was 17.
Oh, yeah. This is why you heard Tom mentioning proficiencies, because proficiencies are all the way we can do this. Your work towards, you wanted to be a farmer, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Towards being a farmer doesn't get thrown out when you change your direction, because all the skills that you gained in all the different areas around the learning targets of that school, it still counts towards your diploma. And so you're allowed, high school's the safest place to be trying on the different hats of the possibilities in your world. And then you're saving all the money of your college education because you figured out, like, what if you wanted to be an anthropologist? And then you found out you had to do archaeology. Like one of my students, as soon as she had to discover the rock world, she said, uh-uh. And so she didn't do that in school. But it all counts towards the learning.
And you have seen this. I mean, clearly this has become part of your entire worldview. You've started a company. So as I said, you have a vested interest in the state doing this and making it work. But you think this is valuable for all students to have that role, as Joanna said, and in actually crafting what they're going to do and be invested in it themselves?
Every student should have a chance to own his or her learning and be able to move towards her goals. You know, that's the way it is, to be able to have it with the community involved in the surrounding areas, the partnerships, this idea of flexible pathways. It's bumping out the walls of school to include all of us.
That's Josie Jordan. She's on leave right now, but is usually an English teacher in the personalized learning department at Mount Abraham Union Middle High School in Bristol. Her business designing software for schools to use for personalized learning is called School Hack Solutions. Josie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Joanna Fowler is a high school English teacher at Twinfield Union School. Joanna, thank you for being with us as well.
You're welcome, Jane.
Coming up, VPR's Nina Keck on a Castleton University fair designed to help students prepare for their financial futures. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Remember the board game Life? Players spin a wheel and try to navigate the challenges of getting a job, buying a home, and starting a family. Recently, 600 10th graders spent time at Castleton University playing an oversized version of that game. The event was organized to help students prepare for their financial futures. VPR's Nina Keck has more.
Go ahead and spin the wheel of life, sir.
I got it.
You might have something good happen. Might have something bad happen.
Volunteer Peggy Lucci stands near a big colored wheel and encourages students to take their turn.
Oh, so sorry. Your brakes just went. You're going to have to pay $175.
The dejected-looking student jots down the $175 payment and moves on to another volunteer who tries to sell him a car. The students here are participating in the Sophomore Summit, organized by the Rutland Regional Workforce Investment Board, a nonprofit that links schools with local employers. Executive Director Nancy Berzon says the idea is to expose students to different jobs and the realities that go with their salaries.
Part of the day is around, you know, tell me about your career and what it's really like in that world. And the other part of the day is something we added this year, which is the financial reality fair.
Organizers began preparing in the classroom weeks ago, discussing individual career choices with students. Based on that information, each teen was given a personalized form with a job, a realistic salary, college debt if applicable, and a random credit score. Randy Smith, an adult volunteer, says students then have to take that information and buy what they need within their budget.
So now they're going to go to all these different booths and, you know, hopefully what they're going to get are the essentials. So your housing, your furniture, your food.
But he says there are plenty of volunteers pushing tempting extras like pets, Netflix subscriptions, fitness packages, and entertainment. Sophomore Caitlin Snow looks frustrated.
It's expensive to live. Like, really, it's really expensive just to make a living for yourself. Like, I just got a part-time job, and it doesn't even pay that much. Like, I don't have a whole lot in my account, and I had one of the higher-end jobs. I don't know. It's really a lot more difficult than I had anticipated.
On paper, 15-year-old Snow is a marine biologist making $81,000 a year, which sounds like a pretty good salary.
Yeah, it is, but I only have about $2,000 in my account, which it just cost me $400 to get a car. An old car.
The Fairhaven Union sophomore rolls her eyes, but admits this is stuff she needs to know.
Because this is not the type of stuff you learn in school, in a school environment. You get math, you get English, you get science, you get history, which are important in their own aspects, but they're not teaching you how to finance a car. Like, I just learned that you need to do that, and I don't know what that means, so I'm not really sure. I'm still trying to figure it out as we go through the different workshops.
And unfortunately, you were in a hurry to get to work and you have an $85 speeding ticket. So go on over there and take that off.
Glenn Wilcox Hurlbut, another Fairhaven Union student, stands in a nearby line for housing. Working out a budget, he admits, is much harder than he expected.
At first, it's like, oh, hey, yeah, I'm going to go and I'm going to plan out my life on a piece of paper and I'm probably never going to follow it. But then it's like, I get in here and it's like, wow, there's just a lot to, you know, actually contemplate and think about.
Nancy Berzon says getting students this age to realistically think about their future is huge.
They're getting ready to make some pretty important choices in their life. And in their junior year, they're going to start looking at post-secondary education. And some of them, I think if you ask them now, they would all say they want to go to college when they're done. That's what they say. And a lot of them will not end up doing that.
According to the Vermont Agency of Education, fewer than half of Vermont high school graduates will get a college degree. Berzon says of those who do, many will take on enormous debt.
So we wanted to introduce, you know, the cost of education, the cost of what it really takes to live. And get them thinking about that as they're also considering what their career choices are going to be.
Glenn Wilcox Hurlbut wants to become a firefighter or enter the military. Working out a budget on his proposed $35,000 a year salary was challenging, but he says he's not thinking about changing careers.
I think I'm more reinforced by it than I am torn down, just because, like, I'm really passionate about what I do. I'm on the volunteer fire department in Fairhaven already, so it's just one of those things. And I mean, if firefighting in the military doesn't work out in the long run, then I'm just going to be in the military.
To finish the game, the students sit down with a financial counselor. The 10th graders go over their budgets and learn about things like credit scores, insurance premiums, and compound interest. Savannah Diaz and Mariah Santel, students at Otter Valley Union High School, look relieved when they finally stand up.
I did pretty good. I mean, I managed my money well, but I didn't get clothing, food, or a cell phone. But
those will come later.
Yeah.
Those will come later. We need to get the important stuff first.
In other words, spend your money wisely and don't go crazy with it, the two say with a grin. Lessons just about anyone can learn from. For VPR News, I'm Nina Kack.
It's your birthday. You just got $150. Come on over here and he'll show you where to write that in. You're going to add $150. Step up and spin the wheel of reality.
And VPR's Nina Kack participated in a careers panel at that event. We'll have photos of the Financial Reality Fair up on VPR.net this afternoon. For centuries, Vermont has been able to turn fall foliage into tourist dollars. But there are two men who are now exporting the colorful leaves for a price. They have formed the Vermont Leaf Company and are selling a dozen authentic Vermont autumn leaves for $20, or a box of 50 leaves for $40. What a bargain. They collect the leaves out in nature, package them in plastic bags, and mail to your location, which is presumably nowhere near a deciduous forest. We recently caught up with the Brain Trust for this idea as they gathered colorful leaves in Samansky Park in South Burlington.
My name is Frank Davis. I'm the creator and founder of the Vermont Leaf Company.
My name is Uwe Heist. I'm a co-founder of the Vermont Leaf Company. When Frank said we should ship leaves, I said, this makes perfect sense. Let's just do it.
There's so many different ways that people could make use of this. An office space where everybody's in a cubicle. I mean, I'm sure that would brighten some faces to be able to just strew leaves across. I can even see it at weddings instead of, you know, flower petals. A very Vermont wedding kind of thing where people are just doing leaves.
Yeah, beautiful. So here it's only maple, but in some areas you also have some oak trees, and they also have some nice color contrast, like a very dark, intense red, almost a little bit waxy on the surface. And then if you combine this with a regular green leaf, it's a stunning contrast.
It's almost like flavors, you know, this is like lemon lime and, you know, cherry, and I'm always on the lookout for grape. I mean, here's, look, but that's almost like a Merlot, you know?
Yeah, a nice side effect is I started dreaming in intense colors. Usually, like, I'm happy to have like one or two colors in my dreams, but this is now a firework of colors every night. And I think it just comes by interacting with leaves so much, you know, it's just there, it's on your mind all the time.
It's therapeutic, it's gorgeous, it has its own really precious value. It's almost totemic. The leaf itself is an archetype. So why don't you start putting something together? I'll give you some green, there's some cherry, orange.
Nice,
Lemon.
Oh, what a contrast.
Right?
Yeah. So I think we'll arrange again, like, complementing colors. And yeah, very intense and small red leaf. It's a nice accent. We're right between the green and the yellow. It's nice, huh?
Yeah, I think you're doing fine.
Thank you for the encouragement. Well, actually, I'm serious. I'm really intrigued by this because I really believe it can help other people. You know? Because it helps us just doing this work, and I imagine somebody else having a similar experience when they get the leaves. Not only are we sorting the leaves out, we're sorting all kinds of issues out while we do this. Yeah. Our vacuum machine doesn't really work well with Ziploc bags. So we have a special process that we borrowed from Orange is the New Black. We use a straw to suck the air out, and it works wonderfully. It might be an occupational hazard. These leaves are natural products, right? So probably good for you. A lot of, like, you know...
That's right.
Yeah, natural bacteria.
That maple decay.
Looks good.
All right, in case you think we're making this up, we have a link to Vermont Leaf Company's website on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Frank and Uwe say they have shipped orders to Florida, California, and New Mexico. Surprisingly, no orders have come in from Vermont. Rick Sangari produced our story. Now, from golden leaves to the golden dome, Vermont's State House has seen a lot of historic legislation and pomp and circumstance in its day. Tomorrow, we'll learn all about the building and its two predecessors. Did you know that there were two state houses before this one? When the authors of a new book about the State House join us, send your questions about the Vermont State House lore and history to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangari and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Hannah Kearns. Liam Connors directed the program, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.